Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Jersey Coastal Live. I'm Andrea Tarr. So today is the first day of my annual filmmaker series, and as some of you might know, the Garden State Film Festival is coming to Atlantic City in just a few weeks, and I always like to meet up with some interesting filmmakers and talk to them and find out about how their creative process works. It's always been really fun for me to do this. And you can always browse my archives of Jersey Coastal Live, and you'll see some of the previous shows where I've talked to other filmmakers. Today, to kick off my filmmaker series, is Michael Boylan. He is from Atlantic Highlands, New Jersey. And so he has recently done his latest short film. It's called The Radio. It's going to be premiering in about a month. He'll talk about that. And, Michael, I want to say thank you so much for being with me today.
No problem, Andrew. Thanks for having me on.
It really is my pleasure. And again, you're my first in my series on filmmakers. And I have, you know, after going to the film festival, the Garden State Film Festival, for several years now, and I really do have an appreciation that I didn't have before for independent filmmakers and the pain and the difficulties that everyone goes through, because some of these filmmakers have, you know, everything from a budget of zero to, you know, $25, it seems. And yet you managed to really put together some pretty fantastic films. So I just think it's a great thing that there's these venues, these film festivals that give opportunities for creative outlets for filmmakers. Otherwise, what would you do?
Yeah. Yes, it's really a special thing to have this outlet, you know, because for years filmmakers were kind of hidden in the dark, independent filmmakers anyway, you know, unless you were sort of in Hollywood, you were a nobody. So now it's great to have this outlet where we can kind of showcase our art and let other people see it, because that's, you know, that's the reason why we do it. You know, we want to share our stories and have the world kind of check it out. So it's a wonderful thing to have that.
It is. And so I guess the first thing I want to ask you, a little background on you, because as a kid, were you a movie lover?
I absolutely was. You know, I think probably the first movie that really struck home with me was E.T. when I was a kid. My my father worked for, Us Magazine way back when it started. So it was sort of like, an upstart magazine before it became very tabloid-esque and, you know, who's wearing what kind of stuff, you know. it was definitely more entertainment-based. And he got tickets to a special screening in New York City before it came out. And I went with a few friends and my parents, and I remember just not being able to look away for even a heartbeat. I was just completely enveloped in the story and just fell in love with the characters and the filmmaking and, you know, the visuals. And, you know, from that moment, I sort of knew, wow, this is something that's really interesting. Not knowing at the time that, hey, you could do this as a job or do this as a passion. You know, I just loved the aesthetics of the film and the story, you know. So that was probably the first film that sort of got me going. You know, Steven Spielberg has done that to many filmmakers I know, but that was definitely for me, that was the one.
Well, I had read something on your website. You had said that as a kid you used to look around, imagine what you were seeing was a movie. And in your mind you would edit it in your brain until you could play it back in its entirety. So that's an interesting way to be walking around as a kid.
Yeah, it's just kind of the way my brain worked, I guess. You know, I just always kind of imagined myself in a movie. You know, I'd kind of create these scenarios, whether, you know, I was just going to get the garbage cans or, you know, collect the mail or riding my bike to my friend's house. I would just think of how could this be a movie somehow, you know. It's just the fun imagination of a child, you know. It's just a wonderful thing.
And was this before or after seeing E.T.?
It's probably after. I think I was 8 when I saw E.T., so, you know, it probably started before, too, but I think E.T. really spurred it. You know, when you have that first movie you see where you just fall in love with filmmaking, then your brain really starts going, you know?
So when did you get a hold of your first movie camera?
I didn't really get involved with movie film. You know, I had video cameras growing up in the 80s. You know, it was all about video and stuff. You know, a lot of filmmakers from the 70s, they had like a Super 8 film. And
yep.
So I was definitely the video generation. So I had a video camera and my friends and I would, you know, just make just really bad movies, you know, whether they were action movies or
like
we were into wrestling, we'd like set up like a wrestling match and we'd recreate like another favorite movie of mine's Halloween. We'd recreate like Halloween and, you know, just do silly, stupid things, but nowhere near technical, you know, capacity. It was just kind of fun, you know, goofing around with friends. But the one constant was having the camera. You know, we'd have the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just fun to kind of watch the stuff back and laugh at ourselves and sort of figure out ways to make it better and do cooler things, you know.
And so were you the director?
You know, we all kind of took turns, you know, but, you know,
okay.
We definitely would try to, you know, write little things or, you know, get behind the camera and direct, but we were mostly acting and doing everything, you know, so
mm-hmm.
It was kind of a collaborative thing at the time.
Very cool. Just an unscripted idea, you know, and here's an idea, let's recreate a wrestling match, something like that, and then you just kind of go for it.
Yeah, totally. Or just like, hey, let's rip off the movie Halloween and change the character names. And you know, we cast our friend as, like, Dr. Loomis. And, he it's just silly, silly stuff. You know, we watch
mm-hmm.
it now, and it's just like a big joke, you know.
Do you still have them?
I think I might. I don't think I have anything to play them on. I probably could. I'll have to, like, search eBay or something to find the right players for these these tapes, you know, because it's not like VHS tape. It was, like, Hi-8 or something like that back in the day. I don't even remember. I'll have to save them for when my kids get a little bit older and they can appreciate it and laugh at me, you know.
But as a kid, did you ever make something that you thought was really a worthy film?
Trying to think. In high school, you know, that's when I started to get a little more serious with it. My friend,
mm-hmm.
my friend Kevin and I, we made this movie for a school project called The Key House, and it was just like an action movie. And it was kind of like the first time we actually thought about shots and kind of not cutting together, but sort of like, let's get this angle, like, let's get that angle. And we had like a soundtrack underneath it. But, you know, at the time, I still wasn't that serious about it. You know, it was just kind of like, to me, it was always just fun. I never thought of it as like a career or,
okay.
you know, how could I
yeah.
turn this into money? Or it was just for fun, basically. It was like, hey, you know, to do this high school project, you can make a movie. And we were like, oh, cool, this will be easier so we don't have to, like, type a paper or something, you know?
kids are like that. Yeah. Well, it definitely seems better than typing out a paper, even to me.
Absolutely. Who wants to do that? Unless you're a writer, then you really want to do that, you
know? But now you became an instructor at Brookdale?
I taught a filmmaking class with another friend of mine, Rob. He's more of like a screenwriter, and I was sort of a camera guy director. And we came up with this course that we pitched to Brookdale for their non-credit program. And we only taught it once, actually, because the class was really expensive. And we kind of butt heads with Brookdale about it, saying, hey, could you lower this price? You know, we'll take a cut. And they were insistent, saying, no, you really have to charge this much for this class. So it ended up a lot of people wouldn't sign up for it, and then it would get canceled. But so we taught it once, and it was a lot of fun because I used to be a teacher. I was a second-grade teacher for a few years in Red Bank. And I just love teaching. So that's something I'd like to get back into, too, is teaching filmmaking to maybe high schoolers or, you know, college kids. You know, it's something that I really enjoy teaching and filmmaking. So if I can kind of merge the two together, it would be awesome. You know, it'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, I think it's a nice thing when you have a creative thing to share with, you know, pass the torch to the next generation. I like that idea.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in your class, did your students make films?
We made, you know, it was a shorter class, so we couldn't make like a whole film. So what we did was we all sort of wrote a scene, and then we kind of, everyone sort of picked what the best scene was and the one that we knew we could film, and then we filmed that scene.
Oh, okay.
But we applied, we applied all the skills that we learned, like screenwriting, lighting, sound, camera movements, you know, and we applied that all to that one scene. So it was great. Everyone got to do a little bit of everything, and it was a really, like, nice class because it was super hands-on, and everyone sort of got their hands dirty and learned filmmaking. You know, it was great.
Nice, nice. And as I told you before, one of my good friends, Tony Hatches, we have to give a shout out to Tony. She was
yeah.
in your class, and I just thought
yeah,
that was
so
really such a small world that
Absolutely.
You know Tony should be in your class. Because she used to talk
yeah,
about her class at Brookdale, and who knew that you and I would be having this conversation. I like that.
I know. It's such a small world. It's crazy.
So tell me, what was your inspiration for Pennant Films? Because that's your company now.
Yes, yes. The name just kind of came from, I don't know, it just reminds me of sort of like a boyhood kind of thing. You know, I just remember having like, you know, when you travel with your family, you'd like pick up a pennant from like a
yes.
state or, you know, and you'd
yes.
hang them on your wall. It just reminds me of that feeling of that sort of childhood sort of mystery and wonder and just fun. And so, you know, I kind of like that name. So, you know, that's the name I kind of went with to go with Pennant Films. And then,
well,
you know, I do a lot
baseball.
Of professional work, too.
Yeah, my thought was baseball when I saw Pennant Films, but I remember
yeah,
those
actually,
flags. From...
Yeah, it's nothing to do with baseball, although I do like baseball. I'm a Red Sox fan in New Jersey, so which is interesting. I get a lot of flack from my wife. She's a Yankees fan, so yeah, it's not actually about baseball at all. It's just more about sort of traveling and just like new things and, you know, just that feeling I used to have as a kid, you know.
So, Michael, apparently you can make money as a filmmaker. You know,
well, maybe a little.
Sometimes,
who knows?
Sometimes your hobby actually can make you a little bit of money, which is nice. You know, I remember, you know, growing up, I always loved photography, and it's still my passion. But my dad, I would have loved to have studied filmmaking and or just photography in general. But I grew up hearing that it was frivolous. It's a hobby. You can't make money at these things. But turns out some people do. Yeah,
I think it's if you can figure out a way to do it, it's great. And I think that's
it
what happened
great.
With me. I was my wife and I had a surf shop in Red Bank for about 6 years called Stokaboka Surf and Skate, and it was great. And kind of the whole time I was kind of making commercials for the store and, you know, doing commercials for other people on the side. And then we went out of business. It was kind of around the time when the recession hit and things were kind of tough. So we decided to shut down. And I just realized, I said to my wife, I said, look, you know, I have this talent and I've never taken it too seriously. Now's the time. Maybe I should. And that's when I started kind of doing commercials and stuff to pay the bills. And then, you know, I would do these films on the side to for kind of to appease my creative side, you know?
Definitely. So that was your inspiration to start Pennant Films.
Yeah, that was pretty much it. You know, I had a production company with a friend. We used to do commercials a while ago, and that didn't work out. He went off to do something else, and I did something else. So I kind of dabbled in it a little bit before, you know, but I realized I could do this, and I started to make connections, and, you know, now I do commercials and all kinds of, you know, corporate videos and, you know, other things, which is, it's fun. You know, I've met a lot of great people, and I work with a lot of great people, but, you know, what I really love is making these films. You know, that's kind of definitely my passion, so making the films is what's fun, and doing the kind of commercial promo stuff is kind of paying the bills and, you know, keeps me behind the camera, you know, directing and that kind of stuff.
You know, I found this quote from, of all people, Walt Disney, and he said that we don't make movies to make money, we make money to make more movies.
That's
and I
true.
Thought that really captured the spirit of an independent filmmaker.
Absolutely, yeah, definitely does. That's all, any artist, if you think about it, right? Like, whether you're a photographer or a painter,
well, that's
it's,
true. That's
you have
true.
To. You just have to make your art, you know? And if you don't, you kind of you go crazy, you know? You lose
everything,
your mind a little
right,
bit. Right,
so. Exactly. Everything is, you know, sort of to fund your drug of choice, whatever it might be, filmmaking, photography, whatever it is. I don't
right,
think that Walt
right.
Disney had to worry so much about money, but I think it's
no.
true. You make money to make your next movie. Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. You're always having the next project in mind, you know? It's always ready to go, so.
What was your very first project with Pennant Films?
As far as a film or as far as, like
no,
work-related stuff?
No, as far as an actual film. What was the first one that you did?
Yeah, I did one. This wasn't Pennant Films, but the first one I did as Pennant Films was with my kids, actually. I have twin boys. They're actually 10.
Okay.
Now.
Cool.
And when they were they were in first grade, I think, I made a film called Brotherly Love.
Oh.
And we entered it into the Film One Fest, which is like a 2-minute film festival here in Atlantic Highlands where I live. It's a great film festival, like under the stars in the harbor in the summertime. It's awesome. So I made this like 2-minute movie about two boys that were in love with the same girl. And they had a meeting with her in the morning, and they both slept in. And it was like their journey to get to her first, basically, to win her affection. Mm-hmm. And with my love of like the Twilight Zone and like movies with the twist, you know, I kind of threw a little twist at the end. Yeah. And there's a nice little twist where there's another boy that's in the harbor waiting, just kind of watching. And the two boys crash and like fall down. And this other boy takes the opportunity to, like, take the flowers that they got for her and give it to her. And then, you know, he wins her affection. So neither of them get it. So the last shot, they're kind of walking away, you know, and the one brother puts his hand on the other one's shoulder, and that's how it ends. So it was a cute little 2-minute movie, no dialogue, just music and action. And, yeah, and we won the festival that year, which was a lot of fun. So
fantastic.
Yeah, it was cool. Yeah, so that was my first, you know, Pen and Films production. So it was great to sort of kick that off with a nice, easy film with my kids, directing them, and in my hometown too, which was really neat.
And it doesn't hurt that you're the winner of the festival either.
We were one of the winners. We weren't the winner, but they have like different.
Well,
yeah, they have different judges,
yeah.
And each judge picks a film, mm-hmm. And I got picked by a Hollywood editor named Susan Littenberg. She picked our film, which was awesome. So it was really nice. I got to be friends with her and meet her, and she's been. We've had a nice relationship now. It's great.
Now, your most recent short film is called The Radio, and tell me about that.
That's sort of like, you know, getting back to like E.T. and movies like Steven Spielberg, what I always loved. I always liked those kind of films, you know, and I wanted to, I had this idea one day about, what if there was, you know, a boy and his best friend was his uncle, and his uncle dies. And this boy is not very good with girls and he's sort of shy and awkward. What if the uncle can speak to him through this radio and give him love advice? And I thought, what a cute story, but has like a nice supernatural feel to it. But what if you could tell this story where this uncle kind of relays this information to his nephew through like a vintage radio that has some magic, you know?
Yeah.
So it's been a really fun project, and I've gotten a good response for, you know, friends and family that I've shown it to, and I just can't wait to share it with everybody. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, one of the things that I also saw on your website, and now after listening to you, it's more clear. You did a post on lighting, and you mentioned about how lighting is key to setting the mood for the film. And so, as a photographer, lighting obviously is very important to me. But even in film, I think lighting definitely sets the mood. You talked a little bit about the use of fog, and you did talk about Spielberg. So what's your take on lighting?
Lighting, it's very important because, like you said, it really does set the tone and the mood of a scene, whether it's a happy scene, a scary scene, a sad scene. You know, if the lighting's off, it really changes the perspective of the audience because they'll go into the scene thinking, oh, this is a happy scene and it's supposed to be a sad scene. So the lighting is crucial, and we had a lot of fun kind of creating. There's the scene where the nephew first hears the uncle through the radio. At first, he doesn't know what the noise is, so he's scared. And my director of photography and I, his name is Michael Altino. He's amazing, talented local camera guy. He's a director as well. We're really good friends and have a lot of the same tastes. We tried to recreate the scene with really, really motivational lighting. And we did this trick with Steven Spielberg and a lot of filmmakers used to do, where you'd kind of fill a room with fog. Because the nephew has a flashlight in the scene. And if you've ever seen Hollywood movies where someone has a flashlight, you'll see, like, the beam of light, and you're like, how do they do that? That's so cool. Like, how are they seeing that beam of light? And that's all it is. It's like fog, or they actually use, like, what beekeepers use, you know, to, like, kind of keep the bees at bay. They use that as well. But it creates that cool effect where the light, you see the streams of light and you see like the patterns of light coming through a window, and it really sets a nice tone for you know, a scene that you want to be kind of spooky like that, you know?
Yeah, I thought that was clever. You had a few shots on your website, so I could see the moodiness of the scene and that light sort of coming through, even the light on your teaser. And by the way, everyone who's listening, I will put up links on my blog after the show so that you can check out the teaser for the radio, and of course you can check out Michael's other things on his website. But I like how you showed the light coming through on the radio. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
That was very cool.
Thank you.
Very
Thanks.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah, I'm a big fan of lighting. It really, it what is photography or everything is all about lighting.
It really
now,
is, you know, and a lot of new filmmakers don't really pay attention to it. It's kind of like, you know, they just like let it go. They're like, we don't have to worry about lighting, but it really is important. Any independent filmmaker should really focus on lighting as much as they do camera moves and all that kind of stuff, composition and stuff. It's really important.
How did you learn about all of that? The effective use of lighting. It's one thing to know about it, but then how do you learn to execute it?
You know, hands-on stuff is the best, but I did go to film school in Pittsburgh. It was like a trade film school. I went after I got my undergrad degree. But and then just in books and you know, now with the internet, with like YouTube videos, there's so many great filmmakers out there that'll put out like instructional videos of how to do things. And you know, when I taught at Brookdale and if I'm teaching local kids, I'll kind of share these people with them and say, hey, check out this guy's YouTube channel. He's got a lot of great tutorials on how to do this sort of technique. Or so nowadays it's really easy to kind of learn all this stuff on your own and kind of find neat techniques and cool filmmaking tricks and stuff, you know.
What do you find to be a big challenge in telling a whole story in a very short period of time on film?
It's hard, you know, it's hard. People always ask me, like, how come you haven't made a full-length film yet? And I always tell them, you know, I'm getting there, you know, I'm slowly
be
getting
patient,
there.
Be patient, right.
Yeah, it's tough. Like, that's the thing. I'm, like, kind of working out the kinks in all these short films, and then hopefully I'll, you know, have the confidence to you know, direct and write my first feature. But, yeah, telling a story in a short amount of time is really hard. When I did that movie, The Brotherly Love, it was really challenging to kind of have a beginning, middle, and an end all within 2 minutes, you know what I mean? It was really hard. It's really hard. You really can't focus on anything except like a single event, you know? And then with this new film, The Radio, it's almost like a full-length film condensed to about 30 minutes. There's kind of a lot going on, but at the same time, it's definitely easy to kind of see what's going on and get the story, you know, in that amount of time. But it's definitely a challenge to kind of tell a whole story in a condensed amount of time. It's more challenging, I'd say, than probably a full length. But who knows? I haven't written a full length yet, so it's not for me to say, you know.
Well, this move, The Radio, is 30 minutes.
Yeah, it's going to be about 30 minutes.
Okay.
That's where it's
about
kind
30
of
minutes.
Yeah. It,
okay.
Yep.
Now, last year, in 2014, you had one of your movies, The Baseball Card, which was accepted as an official entry into the Garden State Film Festival.
Yeah.
And how did that feel?
That was great. You know, that was, you know, I have entered all my movies into festivals and stuff, and, you know, some have gotten in and to some festivals, but last year The Baseball Card was great because we entered it into about 15 festivals, and we got into about 8, I want to say. So
wow.
It was just a neat neat experience to have that feeling of being accepted and knowing that other people were going to see this little film that I made in my hometown, you know, with, like, local kids and stuff. And it was really great. But the Garden State Film Festival was awesome because I was able to invite all the actors and their families down, and we were all got to experience it together, which was cool.
Together.
And I always,
yeah.
It was neat to almost watch their faces, the actors' faces, watch the movie with a crowd of people in a theater. It was really neat, you know, to kind of experience that.
Well, that brings me to my next question, which I always love to ask any filmmaker that I speak to. So here you are, you've created this. This is your baby. This is your film. And now you're in this new venue with all these strangers who you don't know who they are, and they're now watching your film. So how does that feel to you? It's your film. Are you nervous? What are you thinking?
Yeah, no, I'm nervous. I'm definitely nervous. But it's just like a fun feeling too, because that's the whole point of making the film, is that you want other people to see it and experience it. So it's kind of like a nervous feeling, but then an excited feeling, like, oh, I hope people enjoy it. And you know, when you hear like the laughs and you hear everyone laugh at the right moment, you get so excited, like, wow, that worked. You know, it's just a great experience to experience it with other people. You know.
Now, the baseball card was relatively short. That was about 8 or 9 minutes, as I recall.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Of course, that was on a beautiful sunny day, so I guess lighting was not too much of an issue there. But I must say, the kids were so natural. They were really wonderful. I wonder, you know, how was it working with those kids?
It was great. You know, it was a fun experience. I knew two of the kids. They went to where my kids go to school in Atlantic Highlands, so I knew them.
Uh-huh.
They auditioned. And then the other kid, his name's Aiden Butler, he goes to where my wife teaches. My wife's a teacher at the Red Bank Charter School.
Mm-hmm.
And I happened to see him in a production of Grease. They were doing Grease at the Red Bank Charter School. And I turned to my wife and I said, who is this kid? Because he had this presence that just like flew off the screen. And I was like, wow. This kid has to be an actor. And I remember saying to her, I said, I'm going to cast this kid in something. And at the time, I don't think I had the baseball card in my head. But as soon as I started writing it, I knew the character that he was going to play. And I knew I had to cast him in it, you know. So it was fun. Yeah, we had a fun time on that production. It was great. It was like summertime. We were out, you know, on this path, the Henry Hudson Trail, like by my house. And we just had a great time. It was just like a fun production.
So I am curious about one thing. I noticed that the card was a Don Mattingly card, and I wondered what the significance,
yes,
if any, to that card.
Well, you know, I kind of asked around, because like I said, I like the Red Sox. I'm not like the biggest baseball fan, but I tend to I'm drawn to New England teams, so I do like the Red Sox. So it's kind of funny that, you know, my short film, it's a Yankees player. It doesn't make a lot of sense. But I wanted to sort of, since the film takes place in the 80s, and I asked around to some of my friends that are really into baseball, who would be the iconic baseball player that kids would be fighting to get that baseball card?
I
got a lot of feedback, and my one friend's older brother, his name's Danny, he said it's got to be Don Mattingly, has to be. And, you know, I asked around, and people were like, yeah, Don Mattingly would be awesome. So it was just kind of research of who would be that card, that really sought-after card that kids would be like, I need that card, you know. So, so it was Don.
Well, I thought it was, you know, you talked earlier about in your movies there's a bit of a twist. And there certainly was a twist in that. I didn't see that coming.
Yes.
And
yeah.
I like how it ended. That was an interesting ending.
Thanks. Yeah, it's interesting because you see this character as like being the good guy, and then he works his way to get the card. But yeah, I like that. I like those kind of stories. You know, I like stories with a little twist at the end or something that'll make the audience kind of turn their head a little bit and say, oh wow, I didn't see that coming. You know.
Yeah, we thought he was going to be the good kid.
Yeah. Well, I think he was a good kid. He just
You know, it turned out he was as self-serving as the others. Everybody
wanted
that baseball
card. He was a smart kid, let's
say. Yeah, he was crazy like a fox, most definitely.
Yes.
So actually, we only have a little more than a minute left to go, and I just want to say, first of all, tell me the premiere for, I'm going to put it on my blog, but just I want you to tell everyone, the premiere for the radio is when?
It's May 8th, it's a Friday night, and it's at the Atlantic Cinemas right in Atlantic Highlands, and it's going to be at 9:30 p.m.
Okay.
And if anybody wants tickets, it's kind of like, you know, if anybody wants tickets, they can just contact me through our Facebook page at Pennant Films or through our website, which is pennantcollective.com.
And I'll put links up on my blog so people don't have to worry about remembering all of that stuff.
Great. Yeah,
well,
thank you.
Michael, thank you so much for being with me today. It was, again, it's always fun to talk to creative people. I have a special love for films. And even though I'm a still photographer, I do have a special love for film. So I am looking forward to seeing you at the premiere.
Yeah, thanks, Andrea.
Sure.
Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Okay, so can 30 minutes change your life? Maybe. So keep listening to Jersey Coastal Live. So until next time, I'm Andrea Tarr. I want to say thank you again to Michael Boylan, and I will look forward to seeing him at the premiere of the radio. Hope to see some of you listeners out there as well. All right, Michael, thank you so much. Take care.
Thanks, Andrea. Bye-bye. Take care. Bye-bye.
Right, bye.